Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
One more pick, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamale, just about over on the board. SP Futures down a whole $5. We were up five last night, so we've turned. Dow Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures down 4.25. So, not that much going on. We were at a nice move. Well, we got a bounce back on Friday. Not a huge move considering the week, but we're up a little bit on Friday. Not so today. Again, we've got Europe down slightly, and we've got Asia up slightly. Well, actually, a little bit more than slightly. So it's kind of a mixed bag worldwide here. So we've got new estimates on tariffs, hundreds of billions of dollars towards people. Brent, are you with us, buddy?
I am. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. How are you from... Where are you? You're in Michigan?
Yes, southwestern Michigan.
You actually sound pretty good. Are you on a landline?
No, I'm not, but I went down to the community center instead of being at home because I know it's going to be pretty spotty at home, but there's better service down in our community center.
Well, hopefully you're part of the community and they let you in, you know. Yeah. So did you have a good weekend?
That's also where the internet is, so I can access things like some news reports and things.
I see. There's all kinds of stuff going on. I was going to I found some very interesting stuff yesterday. And matter of fact, something is pretty scary when you think about it. I found some big article on people that are hiring firms research firms to let them know how global warming is going to affect real estate in the various parts of the country, and they're in investing or not investing accordingly. Then I found some interesting stuff about people with college loans in the cities they are in, and which are the 10 worst cities if you have a college loan. And as usual, whenever you read something, or whenever I read something, I you know what? I want to come back, Brendan, as one of those people that kind of knows it all, because I don't have to worry about reading stuff anymore. I just know it all. I could, like, even be president maybe someday. I don't have to read. I don't have to do anything. I just got a gut feel for stuff.
President, chief. Well, you already are the chief. Like,
yeah, well,
the chief of the country there.
but there's everybody's a chief now. Chief bottle washer, chief everything. I mean, there's you know, they're all chiefs is no big deal. The only thing is the chief.
Yeah, there's only one chief. Come on, there's only one chief.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like the, you mean everybody's a chief. If they made a Western movie now, all the guys running around out there would have headdresses on and not one feather. Just saying. Anyway, these numbers are going to stun probably you and Mr. Matt Weber. This is an interesting thing. They went through 2,500. Metropolitan statistical areas. They still call those things that high? I think they do, don't they?
They are still called that.
Yeah. A study from NerdWallet. Manny, who's NerdWallet?
I don't know NerdWallet. I'll find out.
Anyway, these guys went through. These guys. They probably had a few ladies with them. These people went through. Americans owe how much in student loans? Gentlemen. You should know this because I quote this all the time.
I didn't hear the question, but NerdWallet, real quick, is an American personal finance company founded in 2009. It offers a website and app that aims to assist users in making personal financial decisions.
Okay. Sounds like a potential sponsor to me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't remember the exact amount now. How much is it for outstanding student debt?
$1.5 trillion. And remember, Maddie, how long have we been doing the show? 8 years? 7 years?
This iteration of the show, it's been over 9 years.
When we started, I don't know when, somewhere in the iteration, student loans were considered in personal debt, right? Or credit, in personal debt. Like, it was in the credit card debt area.
Mm-hmm.
And then about maybe 5 years ago, they pulled them out. And I'm thinking somewhere 4 or 5 years ago, the line crossed between personal debt or credit card debt and student debt at right around $950 million or something. And credit card debt's gone up some since then. This thing is now like 50% higher. Anyway, if they would have asked you, if they went through and they 2,500 cities, I seem to recall, I read it here someplace. Anyway, they decided to find out where the median student loan debt is and the median income of somebody with a college education. So it's, now, I question, I don't usually try and be, get on my soapbox, but I will do this for sure. Everybody, including me, self, Brandon, Maddie, whenever you look at a survey, a statistic, or whatever, I think it behooves you to really read what it is they're checking, they're counting, right? I mean, it's like doing a test. Read the question, read the answers, because they're probably doing a very good job at studying what it is they're studying. Just make sure they're studying the same thing you think they're studying. So I would have gotten an F on this test, because I would have guessed, since there's people that I know in Chicago that have 150,000, 200,000 student loans, and I've heard stories about people that have, what do you know? What do you know? From your law firm when you were there, Brendan, I would bet that some of the people applying for positions out of law school were well into the six figures because they had undergrad and grad school.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that, and a lot of firms it's like that, and that's, they get sucked in where they have to work at a big firm, or a significant firm, or else they're really in trouble for a long period of time.
Well, and this one, I would have guessed, you know, again, be careful what you think you're going to see before you actually look at it. I would have guessed that it would have been those people, the people that had the student loans well into the high numbers, and somehow, but no, the towns are these little towns. I would never have guessed this. Number 10, and all of a sudden the number is not the student loan number. Whatever their study was here, that didn't turn out to be the incredible thing they found. It's how little people made. City number one.
I'm not surprised at that.
See, now you're a better man than me.
That's where you were going.
You're a better man than me. I would have assumed I would have got someplace where the total student loan debt was, you know, 250 grand and a guy's making 50. Or something along those lines. No. It's all these little towns. Dacula, Georgia. Median student debt balance, $20,000, which I would think is not even all that much a problem. You know,
that's almost like just a credit card debt.
Yeah, median earnings of bachelor's degree holders, 26 grand. So what they're trying to study here is ratio of student debt to median earnings of bachelor's degree holders. Now, this doesn't count people with graduate school debt, so that's probably another whole survey. So mm-hmm. it leaves the people of law school and stuff out of it. But this is, and you go through, and look at the towns. Austell, Georgia, Murray, Kentucky. Where the hell is Murray? Median student debt balance, $21,000. Median earnings, $27,000. Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Lady Lake, Florida. Where the hell is that? East Liverpool, Ohio. Get a load of this. It's in Ohio. Median student debt balance, $18,500. Median earnings of bachelor degree holders, $22,000. What the hell, over? God, where did they get? I mean, maybe you got family there, maybe you got something, but number one. Well, there's two of them in Arizona. We'll talk to John Neal about Sun City West, Arizona. Median student debt, $17,700. Median earnings of bachelor degree holders, $21,000. 84% of a 1 year salary is your student debt. Which, to be honest with you, if you include grad school debt, I think it could get way worse. I'm going to say you're hiring those people at the law firm for, I'll be generous, I'll say 85, 90, and their debt's 250.
Mm-hmm.
That's way worse.
You know, it depends on where you are. I mean, people think of lawyers as making a lot of money across the board, but and while it's true that if you go to the big firms, you know, you go to the Kirkland Ellis's, the Mayer Browns, the Captain Muchins, they usually start their first year associates in the 175 to 200 range, for example. But most lawyers earn out of school are earning less than $50,000.
I would guess that if you go to a small firm and you're actually, you know, schlumping people to court and trying to get people off and stuff, I don't think you're close to that, are you?
No, no. And people who try their own firms, or a lot of folks who go into social service work, even you know, people who have advanced degrees, whether they're masters or doctorates or law degrees or things like that, they may be similar to the figures that you quoted, where they're in their 20s or their $30,000 range right out of school. And if you're talking about massive debt of $100,000, $150,000, I mean, that's crushing. You're never going to get out of that.
No. Because I was reading, of course, I followed up this article with some other ones and how it's been, you know, one of my themes in the show the whole way that all our politics is concerned about it, because I don't see how any of those people can be active, especially if they're, let me ask you this, Brennan, since you're no longer working for the firm, and you never, I'm going to expect you to talk out of school here a little bit. I was talking to some people the other night around about the overbearing bureaucracy of what's in our industry. Okay. But I don't think it's just here. I mean, I don't feel all that special. I think it's sort of everywhere. Are these law firms expected to monitor people's like outside income and stuff?
No, they're not. Although it's interesting, I mean, a lot of the law firms don't do that, but they expect you to work so hard that you can't have outside income. It's not like you could, you know, develop a real estate. If you're a young lawyer in a firm, you're not going to have the time to go out and develop a real estate business that's not related to your law firm. They don't monitor it per se, but, you know, most firms don't. Of course, the higher up you go in, especially larger firms, and the social networking you make, contacts you make, can open the door for other areas of interest. And that's where a lot of lawyers get in trouble with the ARDC, the Attorney Registration Disciplinary Commission here in Illinois, where they do have some outside activities that poses a conflict of interest. Now, one thing that law firms do, however, is that anytime a new client is taken on, they're supposed to do a conflicts check. They're supposed to ask all the lawyers in the firm, do you have a conflict? And under the ethic rules that lawyers are bound to follow, if you have a direct financial or indirect financial interest, then you have to disclose that to the firm. It doesn't mean you can't represent a client in a case like that, but you've got to get a written waiver from them to allow them to allow you to represent them or their opponent in a case.
So what happens if and we're not going to go into what might have happened to somebody you know, what happens if there's a Bernie Sanders rally and Brendan or somebody like him's in the front row with a sign saying get rid of student debt or something, or socialism's the way to go?
That's okay.
Really?
Yeah, that's political free speech.
I don't think anybody else thinks that way. Maybe lawyers are the only ones that do.
No, I think you'll find a lot of folks who think that way. But
I think that a lot of firms, let's put it this way, a lot of people would be afraid to take that chance. Am I right, Manny?
I have no idea.
I know that a lot of people would be afraid to take that chance for fear of what their firm would do or say to them. But there are a lot of other firms that may be willing for the publicity or allow the freedom. It depends on where they're working, what's the attitude of their firm. But, you know, there are firms that would look askance at that and say, what the heck are you doing? Get off TV. Don't have signs like that. But others would permit it.
Well, my point is that having this debt over your head surely makes you, and this I think I know I'm right, is less likely to have you being an entrepreneur. You don't need money.
Right.
And probably nobody's going to loan you any money.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well, we let people go to Deutsche Bank and get that.
Yeah, we go to Deutsche Bank. if they hang in there. Or we can make believe it's a car and go to Santander Bank. say it's really a car you're buying. But, I think that these things kind of nip away at who we are. I don't think you're able to get, I don't see somebody opening up a new place with $250,000 worth of student loan debt. I don't see how he could.
No, you can't. That's impossible. But, you know, that's one of the things that's different than the era in which you and I went to school. Even college and graduate school debt was much more manageable. The increase in tuition has just been astronomical over the last 20 to 30 years in particular. So when we were there, when we were in school, even with debt, it wasn't this astronomical thing that was like buying a mansion at the time. You know, it was more like credit card debt that you could reasonably pay off in 5 to 10 years after school, even if you didn't go to a place that had where you got a tremendous salary. I think that's one of the big differences. And one of the things that I think really should be examined and dealt with is not only the price of big pharmaceutical companies charge for their products, but also education and the cost for education.
I'm going to say, Brennan, I believe this is true. I believe that this is true. The cost of one class at the University of Chicago now exceeds the cost of my total 2 years when I went there.
Mm-hmm.
So, just
I wouldn't be surprised at that. That seems a little bit high, but I wouldn't be.
Well, I paid.
I don't think you're too far off.
It's kind of it's a little trick question because I think it was supposed to be $3,500 a year when I went. Okay, so the first year was $3,500. The second year was going to be, quote, another $3,500, maybe $3,600 or $3,700, but they said, hey, which really was $1,200 a quarter. All right? So they said, if you're willing to take two courses in the summer, because somehow or another they didn't have this is 1975, they didn't have they had some openings in the summer downtown. So I think I could take, I took two courses in the summer, and I think it cost me $600 or something ridiculous like that, $650, $700, something like that. So that only left me eight courses left. So I only had to take, I took four courses a quarter, which isn't really the smart thing to do. And I did, so I really graduated in April. So I had, my second year cost me $2,400 plus six, so it only cost me $3,000. So I'm going to say my total tuition in Chicago was $6,500. And 3 years ago, the cost of a class was $6,000, so it's probably pushing the number right
so
now.
So you're right. That's almost the same thing.
Yeah, and it's very, very close. And I'm going to say that a lot of it hasn't changed. Classrooms are still the same. I will guarantee you they're not paying the teachers 20 times more than when I was there. I'll take that bet with anybody. So I don't know where it necessarily how it gets there. But here's the interesting part. There's always a yin and a yang. I was working on the truck docks, and I was making, I think I was $10 an hour, something like that, $9.50. I don't know. I'd work Friday night, and three of those hours were overtime, and then they'd always bring me back on Saturday. So, in a 24-hour period, I essentially worked 16 hours, and I'm thinking, I might be a little glazed over, but it was at least $8.50 or $9. So let's say I was $200 a weekend. So basically working on weekends, living at home, I could have paid for my grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just the tuition, because if everybody's salary went up with it, and the amount you could make, quote, on the side, now granted, the truck tax was hard work, but so what? I was a big kid. I was fine with it. I actually kind of enjoyed it, but I never liked the hours. I could never do the 12-8 because I could never sleep during the day. My brother, he Dan, the president of PTI Securities, he did it before me. He'd come home, he'd close his door, and he'd sleep. Didn't matter if the phone rang, the dog barked, he didn't care. It was like a rock. I mean, the minute something happened, I was up. There's no way I could sleep during the day with stuff happening. It wasn't like in Vegas where you go by yourself and close the black blinds and you could sleep during the day, but most houses aren't like that, especially in those days. Anyway. For a weekend, it was fine. And so I basically could pay for it myself. I mean, I made $1,000, $1,200 every summer working for the school board as a janitor. I'm going to say kids working the summer now still make $1,000 or $1,500 working at McDonald's or someplace. And now their tuition, now their tuition's $70. My all-in deal senior year at Notre Dame, because I was an RA, so I got my $1,000. Room and board was $1,200. Well, you didn't eat like you do now, but with the great stuff they get there, but it was food. And, I'm going to say it was $3,000 for with, so Notre Dame with room and board was probably $4,000. So I paid for a quarter of that. And I could have done a lot more if I worked at school, which I never did. So, I mean, you're not even close now, where a kid's making $1,000 during the summer, maybe, and the thing's $70,000. I mean, why even bother?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about peeing in a lake.
Yeah.
I mean, these numbers are out of control, Brennan, and I don't see, why is it that you gotta have guys like Bernie Sanders saying, get rid of, let's cover everybody's debt. Why don't we just lower, say, guess what? If you're disabled or something, you get to discharge it in bankruptcy. I mean, that's insane that it's the only debt on earth you can't discharge in bankruptcy. And lower the rate down from 6.5 or whatever a lot of these people are paying, or 6 down to about 3 or 3.5, and do that. And then try to lower someone's tuition. I mean, why can't we work on this incrementally instead of one way or the other? Either there's no problem, which one side seems to think, or there's this massive problem, we got to pay everybody's debt down. Why can't we nip away at it?
Mm-hmm. That's the common sense approach on how to do it.
Okay, so why is it not even close to happening?
Well, there's no political will for it. One side and both sides see it as extreme.
Well, I don't
both sides. Both sides see the other side as extreme,
and they are
unworkable.
They are. Standard quo is extreme, and what they're talking about is extreme. There's a middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, why would you?
But nobody wants to meet in the middle these days.
I mean, why would you forgive it? I mean, somebody got something for it. It's a legitimate debt.
That's right.
But why screw them on it? Why if it's government money, is it 6.5% when they're giving money to banks for free?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I can't answer that question for you, Gene. I wish I could.
All right, well, maybe answer me another one. Billy Buckner.
Yeah, I heard about him.
22 years, never had a game with 3 strikeouts. On Sunday.
I also heard that he never struck out more than 39 times in a season.
Right. And on Sunday, 16 people in the major league struck out 3 times. And yesterday, arguably the best player in Chicago, Harvey Baez, 4
5 times.
5 times,
I heard.
Oh, was it 5? So he struck out again in the 9th inning?
Yep. End of the game.
Oh, my God. How is it, as one ages, and you look in the mirror and you say, self, Maddie, you know that the last few years we played softball, if I couldn't pitch, I had no business out there because I couldn't do anything else. I mean, I understand that. So what would possess me to walk up there and think I'm Big Dan? Big Dan's my niece's boyfriend, nice guy, and he's one of these martial arts, rock-hard sort of dudes who can hit the ball a mile. What would make me think I'm Big Dan all of a sudden? I'm going to go up there, and I'm looking to see where the players aren't, where the most grass is, and try and maneuver it in that direction. Obviously, you can do that a lot easier in softball than you can. What possesses a guy like DeScalzo, who looks to me to be a journeyman player? I honestly have never seen the man get a hit. They got this massive hit on a shift on him. The third baseman is playing almost by second base. How does this guy not? Why is last night at 2 a.m, everybody else is in the bar, isn't he out there learning how to bunt? Who does he think he is, Ted Williams? I'm just asking, man. I'm just struggling here,
I don't know.
No,
him.
Ted Williams didn't strike out very often either. And he got a lot more hits.
But I mean, when they put the shift on him, he was Ted Williams. He said, I don't care. I'm not going to change my batting because you guys put a shift on me. But like I said, he was different. How does this guy not figure out that I'm going the other way?
Yeah.
I
agree.
And what's the other guy? David Bote. They're down by 1 run at one point. Takes a swing on strike 3. He must have missed it by a foot, and he almost came out of his shoes. It's strike 2, buddy. Touch the ball.
Yep.
Whatever.
It's a completely different philosophy now than it was several years ago, when the idea was that you have to hit, you have to make contact. You don't want to strike out. Think about a guy like Nelly Fox or Luke Appling, who came up and made contact all the time.
I don't see a lot of people watching Little League games, because when I pitched in Little League, I either walked them or struck them out. I was a big kid. I wasn't very good. I never got out of my neighborhood. But the simple fact is, that happens in Little League. Why do you want to watch that in Major League Baseball?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't know. It's just, to me, it's kind of a bizarre world. S&P futures down 425. Webb, Mr. Joel, and Ken, after break, talk a little more about what's going on in the world. S&P futures down 425. They were up 580 last night, so there was a little bit of a spin. Nomura came out and said that increasing tariffs on China will likely hurt U.S. growth. Well, we're up to like $700 billion in tariffs or some huge number, they think, in the next year. That's not good. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ellis, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 475, NASDAQ futures down 575, Dow futures down 28. Again, we're up last night. Thought we might be able to update today. So far, we are not, but who knows? We could end up in the plus column. We're not down that much. over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 21.2%. FTSE up 6, call that flat. CAC around down 17.3%. So slower low, but slightly the downside there. Nikkei up 72.4%. Shanghai up 17.6%. Hang Seng up 102.4%. So slightly upside over there. We got oil up 53 cents, but still under 60 bucks, 59.16. Brent up 20, 70.32, so that spread is now $10, make that $11.15. So if we would have bought that, which at 7.50, we'd be up, you know, 3.50, isn't it? It's better than a sharp stick in the eye, as they say. RBOB, 197, up 3 cents. Natural gas, 257, still can't go anywhere. We've got gold, 12.83. It's kind of hanging in there. It's a 12.83 number. Down 50 cents, silver down 9 cents, 14.46. Betty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. And how many shootings do we have this weekend? And it rained. What if it was sunny the whole weekend?
Too many. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash on the outbound Kennedy. Looks like just before Foster Avenue as you're heading out toward the airport. So solid traffic on the outbound Kennedy, even though there is no rain so far this morning. But significant delays due to that crash. Inbound side, it looks okay. We have a crash on the north side, Sheridan Road at Hollywood Avenue up near Rogers Park. But no issues on Lakeshore Drive in either direction. Eisenhower traffic building, same with the Stevenson, but no accidents or issues to report. Southside expressways are looking okay. We do have standing water in the area, especially in the suburbs, from the rain that we've had on and off all weekend. The most significant flooding issue is on the exit ramp of I-88 onto the southbound tri-state. That is closed right now due to standing water, so you'll have to take a later exit there. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, although the sun's kind of peeking out right now, but mostly cloudy throughout the day. Temperature is going to stay right where we're at right now. We're 68 degrees, going up to a high of 69, so we'll be in the upper 60s here at the lakefront, maybe a bit warmer than that inland. But lots of clouds. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 86. Right now it's clear and 59. In sports, the White Sox and Royals were suspended yesterday. They tried to resume a couple of times between rainfalls yesterday afternoon. But they decided to suspend the game 1-1 in the fifth. They'll pick that up at 4:40 p.m. Tonight. And then they'll have their regularly scheduled 7 o'clock game right afterward. Cubs lost in Houston 6-5, had a 2-0 lead, then fell behind 6-2, then rallied back with 3 runs to cut it to 1 and had the tying run on base, but could not get that runner in, and they fell to the Astros 6-5. Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 4-3. In hockey, Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals last night saw the Bruins rally back from 2 goals down to beat the Blues 4-2, so Boston leads that series 1-0. And as we touched on briefly before the break, Bill Buckner, former Cub and Major League great for 22 seasons, passed away at age 69 yesterday. He was suffering from dementia. Chief.
One of the greatest lines ever in sports, Tommy Lasorda. He was like a son to me. Yep, as soon as he got a bad knee, they traded him. So much for a son to him.
Yes.
So, Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing all right. So, the original horrible trade was Babe Ruth for money, right? And nobody mentions that he originally was property of the Baltimore Orioles. He literally was a son to the owner because the owner was forced by the orphanage Babe Ruth was in to adopt him when he left. And yet the guy traded him like the next month.
Can we not talk baseball?
Yes.
Because Detroit Tigers.
You guys are big.
Oh, my gosh. They've lost 13 out of 14 games. We are in the middle of a rebuild, and we have a lineup that's hardly recognizable to anybody. If you get a chance, take a look at the error that this shortstop, our up-and-coming shortstop, routine double play, throws the ball to first base, throws it 5 feet over the head of the first baseman. The guy from first ends up scoring, and the runner, who should have been out at first, ends up at third. This is the middle of a rebuild. This is absolutely embarrassing. I don't know what is going on in that organization, but a rebuild, and you can't even recognize any players in the lineup. So no more baseball. Let's not.
Yeah, it's good. Good thing you didn't want to talk baseball.
We can talk Michigan basketball.
No, what about the market? What about tariffs? What are we doing here?
What about tariffs? You're asking me about tariffs. I mean, come on, Chief. I mean, he's putting himself in a bad position because he needs to run a reelection campaign a year from November. The pre-stuff probably starts next week, and the Chinese are going to hold his feet to the fire. So the art of the deal is not becoming the art of the deal here. So if he wants to save it closer to the election, that's fine. But I think each day that goes by, it's a ticking time bomb, and I don't like it at all.
Well, I'm remiss for not remembering her name because she just had an article this weekend. A lady on CNBC who's been a bullet the whole way, she's absolutely convinced that the market is being sort of Harry Houdini, that we are convinced that we're one tweet away from everything being fixed and we're going to go straight up. She's absolutely convinced that the market is not discounting the chances of this turning into, now a few people are saying it's morphing, how's that for a term, from a trade war into a high-tech war, which will be years to deal with. And she's not sure she's right. She says the market is giving that no chance. The market is every morning waiting for the tweet that says everything's okay now and is priced accordingly. And she's convinced that that they're not handicapping this right, sort of like a horse race, type of thing.
Is it Stephanie Link?
No.
Is that who it is? No,
she's always bullish because she works for the
CIA.
Yeah.
You know what, Chief? I just, in all my years, following the markets and before Twitter and after Twitter and what, to me, to have a market so sensitive to tweets, I mean, we didn't have tweets before, so I guess before it was press releases and statements. It's very dangerous. I mean, I do not like it all. The market is not trading on any fundamentals at all. And, I mean, you talk to some people, we're flat out heading for a recession, ready to cut interest rates. I don't believe that. And, the China deal is just, it's an uneasy feeling. Enough to get me completely out of the market? No. But, watching it and, with a bated breath here, it's just not a stable situation. There's no way that you could say with what's going on, I mean, everyone likes volatility and everything, but the volatility as a result of a tweet, to me, is a little concerning.
Well, and you have people maybe reaching to the Oval Office that are convinced that we're only go from 2.5 to 2 in the federal funds rate away from it all being fixed. That's not going to fix anything. If we actually,
you gotta save those interest rates cuts when you need them. You can't if you start cutting rates now. What are you gonna do if we really go into the tank? I mean, I just don't agree. That's I don't want to say a last resort, but I mean, holy smokes! I mean, we're not in the midst of a financial crisis. To go into easing right now, to me, doesn't leave any bullets in the chamber in case we really start to. The economy really starts to slow down. And right. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm not seeing it. Maybe I'm just
right, Joel,
here by what's going on in the Motor City.
Joel, we got you strapped to the chair. We got the headlight right in your eyeballs. We're indoctrinating you. Everybody knows that if you drop your interest rates from 6.5 down to 6.25, it's probably productive and beneficial. You drop your interest rates from 1.5 to 1.25, does it work, not work? Does it work against you? Remember, the light's on you. I need a one-word answer. Help or hurt?
At this point right now, it would hurt.
Yeah, I don't. We're so low, I don't think it makes any difference.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. But, no. And Juwan Howard, you want to talk about that next week? A big Chicago hire. We're going to be recruiting the Chicagoland area very well. Great story with Juwan. Do you know when he was coming to Michigan, he was raised by his grandmother, correct?
Yep.
And she passed away during his recruitment. Steve Fisher, Brian Dutcher went down, showed their, you know, their sympathy. I believe they went to the funeral. Juwan committed. He was the first of the Fab Five. The other guys came along, and then after he finished, you know, he went to pros a year early. Boom, he promised his grandma he'd come back to Michigan, finish his degree. He did after his first year in the NBA here. So a great hire for the media. Would love to see us get back into the tournament next year. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Two key recruits, Franz Wagner, and they got to flip that guy back to Michigan, Jalen Rose. But besides that, Chief, that's all I got for you.
Are you, you guys participating? You guys, Michigan, are you big players in this fifth year derby for all these guys that are in the transfer portal?
You know, at this point, we are just trying to stabilize here. We were in the running for a guy. He ended up going to North Carolina. Beeline has done that, but right now they're just trying to finish up with the assistant coaches right now would be the main. But I don't think we're in any contention, nor do we have time to talk about what I think about that at this time.
All right, buddy. What's a good thing you didn't want to talk baseball? Talk to you next week.
Go Blue.
S&P futures down 450, NASDAQ futures down 475. Come back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's Matt at StocksandJocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Can't buy me love.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Sir Kenny Polcari and Brendan Cornell with us. S&P futures now down 275. Nasdaq futures have gone up, though, 275. Hey, Kenny, how are you, bud?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
All right. Hey, I don't know if you guys, you probably already know. I would imagine that the CNBC family knows as well, but kind of a rough weekend for Stocks and Jacks. Dr. J, a member of the show, obviously great friend forever and the show and everything else. His mom passed away on Friday morning, and known her for 35 years. Easily one of the nice people.
I didn't know that. Thank you for telling me. I was unaware of that.
One of the nice people I've ever met, Kenny. I don't know if you ever met her, but real stand-up. Oldest of nine, grew up, you know, dirt poor on a Minnesota farm. And tell you what, talk about a lady who was not afraid of work, pleasant as all get out. She'd walk away with the old man. They'd be somewhere where he was doing surgery, and she would be at some high-praised dinner, and she'd come over to your house, and the next minute she's cleaning a bathroom. What are you guys doing? How could you have a bathroom that's dirty? please. I mean, without a doubt, one of the most down-to-earth. Have you met her? You loved her. And yeah. We go back a long way, 1980s, when I met Jan, and he was real close to my parents, and I was close with his. And the old man, we'd go to football games. Remember Pete was playing? So Jan and I would drive there, meet the old man, and we'd crash in his room. The guy, us two idiots, piled in and crashed in his room. You know, he didn't care. As long as there was a football game and a lot of people around him. So John always took the cot, gave me the bed. It was nice of him, but the old man would be up at 5 and he'd be gone on something, and John and I'd roll out half hungover from wherever we were. It was good times, really good times. His dad is not doing too well either, but really, really good people. I feel so bad for the family, and they were all real tight.
Yeah, well, you always do in times like that. I was not aware, though. I'm glad you told me. I'll send him a message.
So how are you? What do you think of the lady you guys have had on as a guest? I say you guys. I think like you're the editor. She's convinced that the market is absolutely not handicapping the chances of all this stuff turning into a technology war and everything else. She thinks that the market is priced that we're one tweet away from everything being okay. You agree with her or not? I don't know if I do.
I don't agree with that. I think the headlines show you, right? We've now started to do two steps down and one step up, and so as we march lower, as the market kind of reprices what is now going to be, or what looks like it's going to be, a protracted trade war, right? I mean,
yes.
Trump himself said it this weekend, you know, we're not in any rush to sign any deal with China. Now, whether that's just his style of putting more pressure on the Chinese or going to the table, but, you know, the Chinese have stood up and said, look, we're not going to get pushed around, you're not going to bully us, you're not going to change our style. So we're prepared as well to drag this out. So no, I don't think the market's pricing in yet, and I think we're at a very, very interesting spot. If you look at all the indexes, they're all sitting right at or near their long-term support trend lines. The Russell's already broken it, and so I think that's a warning sign, right? I think that's a warning sign that we continue to get these negative headlines. You're going to get one push down through the 200-day long-term support averages, and then you're going to once again be in that purgatory, that space where, you know, the market doesn't really know what to do, because you have to start drawing trend lines, and then where's their support, and you could see the market kind of flush out a little bit if we test and fail at these trend lines.
Kenny, what do you think of earlier in the show? I did some research this weekend, and it of course didn't turn out anything like I thought it was going to turn out. There was an article about student loans. And they compared student loan debt to the amount of money people make in these various. They took 2,500 cities of all things, amount people make with not a graduate degree, a bachelor's degree. God's sake, Ken! It came out there's like 10 cities in Carolina and Georgia where the average person with a bachelor's degree is making $20,000. For God's sake, now how the hell do you drop everybody? Now everybody who's gotten themselves published is convinced right. that this level, the tariffs, are somewhere between $600 and $800.
Well, John Williams, New York Fed president, came out and said it's $830 or something last Thursday. He came out and said it's costing the average American $830, you know, at the current levels. And if Trump threatens to raise them, which, you know, he clearly taught that in the mix again over the weekend, you know, that number is only going to go up.
Well, why? Well, what does it do to somebody making $20,000 with a bachelor's degree with a student loan, another $800 piling on his back? For God's sake,
Kenny. It certainly doesn't help him, which is, I think, exactly why you're seeing the rise on the left with people like AOC and this new generation of freshman Congress people, men and women that are coming in that are way far on the left. And I think exactly what you're saying and what's happening is only going to further fuel that far left kind of animosity.
Kenny, I want to manage to surround myself with all these right wingers, but I was jousting with one yesterday, and I said, now that I've gone from the left. Well, if I ever really, well, I never was left like these people, but I'm totally in the middle. I said, you know what's amazing to me, and I would love you. Tell me I'm nuts. Feel free. I honestly think that what a lot of the people on the far right see, and what these people on the far left, their solutions are incredibly divergent. And maybe they could never get in a room and talk about solutions, but the problems they're seeing are exactly the same.
I would agree with you. I think the problems are the same, but and you hit the nail on the head. I said they each have two different kind of methodologies on how to fix them, and both are extreme, right? Because I'm neither the left and I'm neither right. I'm like you. I'm smack in the middle. I could really go either way in the sense of, you know, is it a Democrat, is it a Republican? You know, I'm going to vote on the person and the policies. I'm not necessarily so hardcore that I have to say I'm only Republican. I'm going to vote Republican. I don't care what anyone says. That's not true at all. You know, you got to take it in stride, and you have to see who's producing the right message. But I do agree that on the extremes, the both far and the left, the problems are exactly the same, but yet they can't even see it themselves to come to the middle.
I have a question for you, and I don't know, love your opinion, because I have an opinion. I don't have an opinion, so I'm asking you. I think it was Morgan Stanley. I don't know, was it last weekend or weekend before? I can always count on you to read the stuff on the weekends that I read. Morgan Stanley, I believe it was them, came out and said, you know, when you put tariffs on something, even if, how am I going to say this politically correctly, even if you intelligently put tariffs on something, you have to make a guess as to how much your people are going to become less competitive versus how much overseas, in other words, how much the other side's going to have to eat. Okay?
Right.
And I told you a story about the people in the auto glass industry that I happen to know, that the minute the tariff was 10%, everybody in the U.S. raised their stuff 10%. So Morgan Stanley came out and said, based on their estimates of how much the Chinese would, quote, have to absorb, they would never have to pay a tariff, like the president says, but they could very well have to absorb them, which is sort of almost the same thing. So he's not all that wrong.
He does have it wrong, and that's a misconception. People, you know, when they hear that the Chinese are paying the tariffs, in fact, the Chinese are not. You and I are paying the tariffs.
Right, but they may, if all of our guys in the auto glass business said, we're not raising our prices, and China said, well, guess what? We gotta lower ours 10% to compete. They wouldn't be paying them, but they would be absorbing them.
Correct.
Well, now Morgan Stanley claims that all the estimates of how much the Chinese would have to absorb are all wrong, and all that's happening is our people are raising prices.
Well, you know, I'm not that much of an analyst, so I can't really opine on it with any.
Well, I can't either. I can't either. That's why I asked you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the right.
But I don't know if they did a massive survey. I don't know if there were 50 people that did this rigorously,
right,
or whether it's two people's opinion. I don't know. It seems to me the very small sample I have, guys here are pretty happy. I think the steel companies have raised prices. They're not saying, no, we're going to put you out of business and keep ours low. I think a lot of guys here are saying, yahoo.
Right. And I think they are. And I think they're taking advantage of that, which goes right to the point when I think people do get annoyed. And certainly, you know, the Democrats are right when they say it's not China who's paying the tariffs. It's the U.S. average American who's paying the tariffs. And so therefore, you know, he's wrong when he said, you know, China's paid all this money and guess what? We're going to raise tariffs even more. They're going to pay us more money. It's not the Chinese that are paying us the money.
No. And it's, I think that
could end up turning on him if he, you know, I think it could end up turning on him. I think people will smarten up to it.
Well, it's helping his deficit number, and he likes the receipts.
Yes, and so he gets to play that positive. He gets to say, "Look what's happening to our deficit." That's true, but you know, but that's because we're all paying that freight, right?
Well, then we'll drop an infrastructure tax on top of that, and pretty soon our taxes will be double when he went in there.
Right.
Kenny, talk to you next week, buddy. Have a nice week. SP Futures now up 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 10 and a quarter. We've busted ourselves through the upside. We'll come back with Mr. Jeff Joseph, publisher of Luckbox Magazine.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happened.
Hello, Thanks, Jackson. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We still have Mr. Brennan Cornell. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph in studio. Editor, publisher, director, printer. Are you printer too? Luckbox Magazine. You're like George Halas, ticket taker, owner, coach, and end.
Exactly. That's right. Good to be here.
Anyway, welcome. Magazine, I have a few of the magazines in front of me. A lot of robots, artificial intelligence. Boy, oh boy. This stuff is... How much of what's going on with China under the scenes is really this kind of stuff, in your opinion?
Well, certainly on artificial intelligence and robotics, that's certainly an area where they're taking a lead. But as one of the the CEO of iRobot, which is the largest consumer application in the consumer robot space, you know, the company iRobot has the Roomba vacuum cleaner. Okay. And the former CEO is Rodney Brooks, and he claims, as he does in an interview within that publication in front of you, that Asian markets in general are not as sophisticated as we once believed, that they are not as competitive and far along on robotics and artificial intelligence as we thought they were. But they're still very competitive, and they are still the number one threat.
Well, how much of is it an invention, and once there's an invention, it's just, you know, application? I mean, I always go back to like a history reference. And Brendan, have you ever been to the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum?
No, I haven't.
If you're ever in Auburn, you need to go. But it's amazing. Or the Wright-Patterson Museum in Aviation. It's incredible how once somebody invents something, Aviation Museum might even be better. Like within 8 years, guys are barely getting off the ground, and all of a sudden they're flying 200 miles an hour and doing loops. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing once somebody, there's a breakthrough, that 5 years later, it's like, you know, the whole world is your oyster. Is that what's happening in this area?
It's not what's happening in this area. It's a great question because it's directly on point to something that same CEO, Rodney Brooks, had in the conversation in the publication. And the question was specific to him is how close are we to robots taking daily function in our lives, even beyond the consumer side? And he used a simple metaphor of when is a robot going to be able to bring me a beer? And he said, unfortunately, unless there's been a demo 30 years ago on a concept, it's going to take another 10 years for it to come to market. And his example of that was a direct reaction to what Elon Musk said recently about having 1,000 autonomous driving vehicles on the road by next year. He said it's just not going to happen. He made the point that back in 1987 in Germany, a car went 40 miles by itself, autonomous driving, that later on in the early 1900s in the U.S., a car drove from California to New York in an experiment out of Stanford University. Again, autonomous vehicle. Yet even though those advancements came years and years ago, that we are a long, long way from autonomous driving vehicles. So he feels as though that there's a lot more hype than reality associated with a lot of these applications.
Is that because the when I was talking about aviation and automobiles, the inventions were purely, I'll say, mechanical, where this stuff is it's got to be 90% software. It's telling the thing what to do in the decision-making process, and that sort of has to evolve, doesn't it?
That's probably certainly one of the distinctions. Another one that was pointed out by Lex Friedman, who's a professor at MIT, a robotics professor at MIT, it just pointed to just the examples of the nuance involved in autonomous driving and how long it's going to take to fruition, because there are communications that occur every day between us as pedestrians and automobiles, like when you approach a four-way stop and you're looking at each other and you make that kind of nonverbal assessment as to who's going to go first, and that there's no algorithm that can really address that satisfactorily. So these are the kind of issues that really get in the way of the regulatory review and subsequent, you know, approval of these vehicles. When specifically asked Musk, you know, what benchmark are you using to be able to assume that we can move into autonomous vehicle territory, his answer was, when we reach a point where we can prove with data that autonomous vehicles are twice as safe, resulting in twice as less accidents as drivers in vehicles, then we will achieve our regulatory hurdle. And he believed that in the near future, although he's always an optimist, as expressed in the different interviews that we had, that in the near future, we'll all find it funny that human beings were even allowed to drive these 2,000-pound death machines, as he called them, that the safety metrics from driverless vehicles will be so much higher than those with drivers. But that's his viewpoint, and it's not shared by others we spoke to.
Well, I mean, I think the, well, just to agree, the amount of, I mean, I've been driving since I was 16, but the amount of non-verbal communications you get, it's like having a robot trying to figure out whether some girl's interested in him. I mean there's a million non-verbal things going on there that if you don't, well, most guys can't pick up on them anyway, but they're probably a little better at it than a robot. Let's put it this way. Yeah. By the time you learn to pick up on them, you're too old to worry about it.
That's right.
But
I wouldn't count on robots helping us out with
no,
that.
No, yeah. But it's, I mean, to me, I mean, I'll speak for Brendan because we both have this kind of south side thing going. I would have guessed that when we started talking about autonomous driving, that the first time you would see it, as I used to drive skiing at least like twice a year out to Colorado in some old junky car, and you see these truck drivers slugging along on I-80. I would have guessed that you would have put some kind of sensors under I-80 out in the middle of nowhere and had some sensor in the guy's truck, and the guy could sit there and look out the window and the truck would just go 65 miles an hour straight ahead, and if you got too close, the thing would put on the... I would have thought that you would start like that, sort of like an autopilot on an airplane. It's an autopilot because there's nobody else around. You're in the air, and as long as you stay at that level, you're not going to run into anybody. I would never have guessed that these guys would try and start downtown Chicago.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what is the reason for that? To me, it makes no sense at all.
Well, because it puts all the algorithms in play. Musk claims in a recent interview that he can today have a driverless vehicle drop you off at Costco at the front door and go find a parking spot and then come get you once you have your groceries. So all that and a lot of the elements that you just referred to are in play there, as opposed to barreling down the highway with, you know, just you in the road. So for some reason they like the challenge of trying to address all these different nuances.
But you've had autopilots on planes. I'm going to say a World War II bomber might have had. I don't know. Brandon, would you know that? Did they have autopilot on like a B-24 or something? Maybe they did.
I don't think they had autopilots that far back, but probably in the late 50s.
But you're never gonna not have a pilot.
All right. Well, a study came out just this weekend on airplane autopilots, basically coming to the conclusion that they make pilots dumber. That the result of autopilot there is less skills in the cockpit today than there were 5 years ago.
Well, when that stuff happened with the 737s Max, of course, there's this little, not that I've ever been in one, there's this little bar on the north side that the guys are, it's loaded with architects and lawyers. Brendan, you got to come with me some night. All these lawyers are riots. Some of them are half suicidal at the end of the day, but they're, anyway.
Which bar is that?
Club Lago.
Oh, sure.
But a couple of those guys were also pilots. And one of the guys, one of the older dudes, was saying, look, you can tell an American pilot all you want that you're supposed to put the autopilot on like 15 feet over the runway because it'll save a quart of gas. No American pilot's going to do that. He's going to take that plane up himself until he feels it's safe and he dares him to fire him. He said, well, the guys overseas are actually going to, they're actually going to listen and they're going to turn the autopilot on the way up like those two planes that went down. He said, it probably wouldn't have happened here because our guys don't let go of the plane that quick. Because they still think they want to fly it because they're military guys or something. They're stick and rudder guys. But they don't trust this stuff until there's nothing that can go wrong, basically. Now, I don't know if they're
right. The whole idea behind autopilot, for cars, put it on auto cruise control or for planes, is not the primary function to fly the plane. It's a backup safety system to allow the pilot to really pay attention to other things that are going on. That's not how it's used. I mean, a lot of times people just use cruise control or use autopilot so that they don't have to do their job. And I agree with what was just said, that in an emergency situation, if something goes wrong, you're not really paying attention, so there's a slower response time, which can be catastrophic.
Well, if I had a car that could go park by itself, that'd be nice, but when it came back, I'm driving. Just saying. Or is that the wrong? Is that an old guy talking, Jeff?
I mean, sounds right to me.
That's an old guy talking.
Sounds right to me.
So I mean, a lot of what I was just reading last night, that the Japanese now are actually convinced that the software, for lack of a better term, the not the plane itself, of the F-35 is now outdated, and they're going to build their own plane. The Japanese. Is that interesting? I mean, so if when a plane now gets obsolete, is it the airframe or is it the electronics on the plane?
You would think that the software could be updated so that the plane is still functional.
Okay, so I mean, I guess what I'm saying is how much of, we seem like we're, I mean, I'm no military guy, but the guy who comes on a Thursday, Lou has been, he was in the Air Force and so forth, but it seems like we're really pushing, you know, we're down from 16 aircraft carriers to 10. We seem to think that the incredible advantage we have in communication and in those kinds of things is a, what will stand out and on the military side. Are we that far advanced with these guys, or will we always be that far advanced, you think, or no?
I think from our research, it's clear to say that there will be less investment in hardware and more in artificial intelligence and software going forward. You know, that the notion of robotic armies and artificial intelligence driving military engagement going forward is a distinct possibility. You already have those capabilities with drones. You can do micro-targeting with drones, and I think there'll be considerably less investment in hardware and more investment in alternative military intelligence.
What is the, you know, there's no way I can argue with that. Plus, I wouldn't want to because you know the stuff and I don't. My question is, there's an assumption to that in that in our last few wars, well, I guess you can't count on Afghanistan, it's our longest war, but the fighting, for lack of a better term, seems to be over in a short period of time, and which is a good thing, obviously. And all this stuff comes into play, and you take out other people's electronics, and you do this, and all of a sudden their anti-missile defense is useless, and their anti-plane defense is useless because you jam everything. What if it doesn't? What if it lasts a little longer? What is it? How long does this stuff, is it like functional for over a long period of time, or eventually does it, in high stress situations, is something you can count on for like years?
It's the question. And then the other question is can you even control it? That's what Musk seems to be most worried about. He's recently made the claim that our biggest threat, our existential threat, seems like there's a lot of existential threats every day, right?
Yeah, well.
Whether you're a politician or an activist, everything is an existential threat. But in Musk's view, it's alternative intelligence, and that is the, you know, that that hell will take over to the dark side, you know.
Well, or somebody manipulating hell.
Yeah.
Well, it's like these guys who, Brendan and I have talked, these guys that are convinced that the Bitcoin situation, that somehow, you know, somebody parachuted down here from the moon and started this up, and he's gone, and it's all left for the rest of the minions to figure it all out, and that the guy who put it together is no longer involved. I can't believe that for a second. That there's nobody in charge of the thing. Can you? I mean, I don't want to talk that much about Bitcoin, but it seems kind of odd to me that whoever designed it is just, you know, poofed back up in his saucer wherever he came from, and that people actually think that nobody's manipulating the thing.
Well, that's the notion of a decentralized currency, but it's hard to imagine it's being manipulated every day by.
Not only every day, but I'm saying whatever.
Right.
So what? Where is the? Since we are Stocks and Jacks, where's the investment here? If somebody, are there all kinds of these small companies, or are they as soon as before you can even find them, somebody else buys them up, or what's happening in the quote industry?
There are many, many companies that are actively investing and developing alternative intelligence and robotics products. Consumer robotics is a lower margin and kind of slower to market because of regulatory issues area, and that's why iRobot has been the leader that has the Roomba, the cordless, that vacuum cleaner that walks around your house, looks like a disc going around your. They've just
one the dog's always barking at.
Right, they've just developed a one for swimming pools. They'll be used for commercial swim and residential swimming pools. They've developed one for outdoor lawn care as well. And those all seem like practical retail applications. But the interesting story about iRobot is it really was providing military intelligence in a major way that was
really?
Ultimately spun off and bought by the government, that portion. So they're strictly a consumer company now, but they have an interesting history. But the short answer is there's many, many companies, and you know just how people attach themselves to themes like Bitcoin or cannabis investing or automation. Robotics and artificial intelligence is clearly a theme that's not going anywhere. It will only accelerate, and those are companies that are the FANG stocks of tomorrow, without any question.
Well, if Brendan and I go out and buy, God help us, a railroad company making passenger cars like I used to do at Pullman, or an automobile company or somebody, we see a guy, you know, welding four spots, and all of a sudden we go, God, it'd be nice to have a robot where the guy could just have the robot weld all four spots, and he can inspect and make sure it's done right. So we will go three times as fast. Who designs, who builds that thing? Does General Motors have their own people that build it? Do they go out to four or five companies and say, this is what we're looking for, and they come in and do all the measurements and come in and adjust? I mean, who's the designer, the producer, the maintenance people of those things? Is it just all kinds of companies? Or?
Yeah, we name about four companies that are really far along in the manufacturing and industrial space. Fanuc, F-A-N-U-C, is one of them. That,
yeah, so those guys at the machinery show.
Yeah, they do a lot of military, they do a lot of medical, and they do a lot of manufacturing. And those are the areas right now that are where most of the expenses and investments being made is military, medical, and manufacturing.
What is the hang-up on, like a Da Vinci machine that'll take your gallbladder out or whatever. Is it mechanical? Is it optics? Is it software? I mean, what's
the microsurgery machines are coming along really well, and they're being embraced by the medical community, probably for the obvious reasons that it, you know, they don't want the liability associated with the surgical, but the surgical precision on some of these, on this new hardware, is amazing. And I've seen videos of it, and they can perform surgeries now with computer and robotics with no human involved that is far more efficient and probably has less margin of error than humans. You know.
Well, the politics. I went to his benefit, one of the hospitals, and I was talking to a few of the doctors, and some of the politics there. Brendan, you'll appreciate that. Actually, it was from a little company in Mary, which is close to where Brendan and I grew up. The best surgeon isn't necessarily the best Da Vinci driver. Which is causes a little carnage, shall we say, in the political spectrum.
Right.
I think you still have a bunch of people standing around watching the thing work, right? It's not in there by itself.
Of course.
Right. But there's with these companies, they're established. I would ask you if you had one, but there's no stock at $2 we could all buy today and tomorrow it's going to be 10 because there's, I mean, it, obviously, wouldn't want you to talk about inside news even if you had it. But are there how many of the up? Is it like the medical community where the established people buy out all the other people, or is it, can people actually get ahead?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. Yeah, there seems to be that trend as you referred to in pharmaceuticals, where the small R&D companies, the biotech companies, would develop new drugs, and the large, you know, Mercks and Pfizers of the world would go out and do the marketing and distribution, and they're no longer developing new drugs. But it's not at that stage now. There's a lot of companies working very specific, narrow applications, there'll be a lot of players. We listed in the latest issue of Luckbox magazine, which is free, by the way. It's a digital publication. In print, you can pay for it, but you can go online to luckboxmagazine.com and just subscribe and get the magazine for free in digital format. And we list about a half a dozen companies that are the up-and-coming players in the space.
What is the who makes the parts for this stuff? I mean, are the chips the same as going to computers? I mean, what if you put one of these, you know, you got a picture of this robot. It looks like the guy in Lost in Space, by the way, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a little retro, right?
A little retro.
Right.
What are the parts that are key?
And NVIDIA is still a player, so that's a stock that still gets a lot of legs from robotics and artificial intelligence. So they still benefit because they're being a chip stock. But there's a lot of traditional names too that are involved. But most of the IP and most of the market value will come out of the algorithms and the software in the early stage. the hardware is more of a commodity.
So every robot arm is going to have the same little electric motor in there as any other one, basically.
Yeah. I saw some nice robots over here in Chicago at EMC Squared. It's a Marriott Autograph Hotel just off of Michigan Avenue. They have two robots, Leo and Cleo, that are in the basement. You see them when you check in. And if you go up to your room, once you're in your room, and there we did a little profile of them in the magazine, but you can just speak to Alexa in the room and say, "Hotel, bring me some towels." And that will automatically trigger something through Alexa that will dispatch the hotel robot. He'll start walking toward the elevator. The elevator will open. It will press the number on its own internally, bring him up to the floor. The robot will walk down the hall to your room, and then when he reaches your door, Alexa's doorbell would ring, telling you that there's somebody outside, and you go open the door, and you open the top of the robot, and your towels will be inside it. And I've seen it deployed. It works. It also brings a six-pack of beer, which is pretty helpful.
So do you think the places that have the four-hour naps want Lexus in the room, taping everything that's going on?
Well, maybe there's a use for the robot there, too.
Oh, yeah. I watch some of the stupid shows on TV. I was watching the NCIS a couple weeks ago, and, of course, they were looking for a murderer, and the place had Alexa. And they hacked into Alexa, and sure enough, there was a picture of the murderer right on Alexa talking.
How about it, right?
I mean, I don't want any part of one of those things, but that's just me. But I do think that in some of the things, I mean, if we'd have had this, certainly in the atomic energy age, how many less people would have gotten burned and had we have problems. I mean, how many people should have to work in a nuclear facility? I mean, if you had robots in case something bad happened, I mean, there clearly is a tremendous advantage to having these types of things.
That's a good point.
Brendan, what are you? You're awful quiet. What are you? You trying to get a robot to do what? Cut your lawn? You don't have a lawn.
I don't have a lawn. Well, we've got some gardening area over here in Michigan, but. That's the kind of stuff that Belle likes to do by hand. She doesn't like the idea of any robots. But it's been a fascinating discussion hearing about the robotic intelligence and bringing the towels up to the room or bringing the six pack up to the room. But at some point, it gets a little creepy. We had an incident over the weekend where Belle and I were just talking in the kitchen area, and I think she said the word seriously, and her phone activated. And sort of, how can I help you? And we didn't even know that the phone was, was charging at the time. And we looked at each other by saying, where did that come from? And apparently just by saying the word seriously, we activated Siri and said, what can I do for you?
So it's listening all the time.
It was pretty creepy.
All the time.
I don't know why anybody would sort of want that.
But. All the time. I hope my Alexa at home is writing a sitcom for a dysfunctional family. it's got enough material to work.
Would anybody ever describe their place as a functional family? And yet, at the end of the day, everybody comes out halfway decent as long as everybody tries. It seems. what's the commercial? Even if you're not the perfect parent, somebody wants you.
Right.
You know. So how often do you guys publish? Is this monthly?
It's a monthly magazine. Yeah. And it's nationwide at Barnes & Noble, Books
A
Million.
I'm looking at this thing. It's a serious publication.
Yeah, it's a real magazine, right.
Who does the printing for you?
Lane Press out of Vermont.
Okay, because the reason why I ask is my uncle, who's been dead for a while, used to put, that's what he did, was put presses in and repair presses. And it was, there were the guys here in Chicago, there was the guys up in London, Ontario. Who were the guys in Dayton, Ohio? Dayton Press,
yeah. It's really the only magazine for active self-directed investors. There really isn't any other publication in the space that, provides actionable ideas and deep dives into specific topics. And
well, so who, now you got the month coming up. Who comes up with the idea of the main two or three articles? I'm fascinated by
that's
this.
Me, the feature story. We're working on esports and electronic gaming next, for the next issue. So, for example, in South Korea in December of last year, 110 million people watched a live sports event beating the Super Bowl, and that was an esports event.
What is that?
That's where people sit around watching other people play video games. It's an amazing thing, and it's
anybody do that?
How about it? It's growing at an amazing pace. It's a $1 billion industry now, and it's going to explode.
Let's continue this effort, but I'm thinking of, would we listen to Manny Weber and his buddies talking about baseball drinking beers? I don't know. Would we watch for that? I don't. That's what Futures
up.
That's
ESPN now.
That's ESPN. As that Futures up 18, we've turned positive. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Jeff Joseph, editor, director, publisher, Luckback Magazine. We're also with Mr. John Neal and Mr. Matt Weber on the board, as he usually is. SP Futures, we were up 5 last night, down 5 when we came in, now we're up 25 cents. So to say we're wobbling across the flat line here is an understatement, but it's a holiday week. As SP Futures up 12.75, they were down 5, and they sprung to the upside here a little bit. Dow up 36. Over in Europe, Before we were slightly to the upside, we're slightly more to the upside. DAX up 20.2%, FTSE up 33.4%, even though they are looking like we're going to have a hard Brexit, which I've sort of been calling for the whole way, not that they asked me. We also have problems with Italy's growing deficit. It never went down. It's always been growing. CAC around up 2. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 77.4%, Shanghai up 17.6%, Hang Seng up 102.4%. So moderately positive there. The latest tweet was, maybe by August, the president says, we'll be okay. Oil, the spread between Brent and West Texas is now mushroomed. West Texas, $59.16, that's up 53 cents. Brent's actually down 5 cents. Spread now is still $10.80. It was $7.50 not that long ago. RBOB gas, $1.96, even though everywhere I was this weekend, they were high because of the weekend, but expect those to come down a little bit. Gold, we've got down $7.20 now, $12.76. The dollar just keeps staying strong, and gold can't deal with that. Silver down 21 cents, $14.34. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building heavily on the Kennedy in both directions. Had an earlier crash at Foster. That's now clear, but resulting congestion is affecting the Kennedy in both directions. We're approaching an hour from downtown out to O'Hare, so keep that in mind. Eisenhower-Stevenson traffic building. We have a crash on the Stevenson southbound right at the LaGrange Road exit. That crash has been moved and is blocking the exit ramp right now, and that's causing the congestion on I-55. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford, normal traffic times for a Tuesday morning. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Route 83 and 63rd Street out in the western burbs, and then out in Naperville, Warrenville Road at Mill Street. There is an accident, but everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, although the sun's poking out a bit this morning. Temperatures will stay right where they're at right now, the upper 60s, a bit warmer inland, going up to a high of 69. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 86 today. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, White Sox and Royals battled through a few rain delays and ended up with a 1-1 tie suspended game in the fifth inning. That will resume this afternoon at 4:40, and then after that game is completed, the regularly scheduled 7 p.m. game will start. The Cubs lost in Houston to the Astros yesterday 6-5. Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 4-3. In hockey, Blackhawks. Bruins won game one of the Stanley Cup Finals 4-2 over St. Louis. They lead that series 1-0. And then as we touched on a bit earlier, former Cub and baseball great Bill Buckner passed away. He was 69.
Chief. Again, he's like a son to me till his knee got bad.
Yes.
Tommy Lasorda. He didn't say about the knee got bad part, but
that's just the way it worked out. So I'm fascinated. A lot of tweets coming in and emails about the conversation so far. Is that sort of, and I want to get into this e-sports thing because it's huge, and I don't think Chief totally recognizes the magnitude.
Oh, no, please take it.
With the NBA getting involved and all that stuff, which I'm sure you guys are touching upon, but just to give some background, Luckbox Magazine and luckboxmagazine.com, this little paragraph that describes you guys on LinkedIn, the Control Freak's Essential Guide to Life, Money, and Probability, a provocative new monthly financial magazine by an award-winning editorial team.
The Control Freak, I like that.
I love that description. Before you get back into the depths of the columns, what's the overall sort of mission statement? How would you describe that, Jeff?
Well, that's a good question, Matt. As I mentioned earlier to Tom, there's really no single publication that is for the investor who wants to take a little bit more control. You know, Tom and I were talking off mic earlier, and he mentioned how, you know, less people are willing to make their own decisions in the market, for better or for worse. And we think it's for worse. And we think it's because they've handed things over to robots in some cases,
yes,
to index funds. And
Jeff has had some experience in the market, so he's not a newbie here.
I'm not a newbie. I'm not a newbie in the market. I grew up in the markets. My background's financial. I'm not a publisher first and foremost. That's only for the last 5 years when I acquired Futures Magazine about 5 years ago. But prior to that, I've always been in the financial services industry. I was a floor trader at a young age, but didn't have the capital behind me to make that work. And then I worked through product development in the mutual fund industry and and built a large $5 billion mutual fund complex for RIDEX, the mutual fund house that had directional products. So I've, you know, been through the, and then, you know, worked as a wealth manager over the years as well in the past. So I understand the subject matter first and foremost, and publishing is secondary to us. And what we recognize is that there really isn't any publication that is intended to empower people just to be a little bit more confident about making investment decisions, whether it be knowledge about what they're investing in or the actual strategies, techniques, and tactics as to how to do it effectively. And that's what the magazine focuses on every month.
Jeff, I have John, you with us?
I am. Good morning.
I'm going to dig into something here that's, I want to say it's getting nearer and dearer to our heart. Jeff, when people invest in these companies, the smaller companies, I'm assuming you've seen your fair share because of the people you talk to with the magazine and everything. People that invest essentially are going to get usually paper securities, correct? And then as the company grows, hopefully it's going to get listed, right? And then eventually people will be able to sell those things, correct?
I'm not going to fall into that trap. I heard your show the other day about how hard it is to sell those paper securities. So I think I know where you're going.
Well, I just was going to say, have you heard about people saying, hey, what the bleep? I can't sell my stuff.
You know, I actually had, and it was so interesting to hear you speak to that a couple days ago because I was involved in a conversation like that several months back. Someone just saying the exact same thing and asking me for assistance there. And quite frankly, I was surprised that it was so difficult for him to sell his securities, his paper securities. So that wasn't something I was aware of until you brought it to my attention.
Some regulator someplace got a hair up his behind, and somehow or another, there's no rule, there's nothing you can read, there's nothing you can even say, well, if I do this, it's okay. It's this nebulous land of this is what the regulators are looking at, which to me is, I don't know, it's like some combination of the Russian bureaucracy and Heinrich Himmler's staff. I don't know what it is, but it's, I mean, it's one thing for you and I and John to be able to say, okay, what's the speed limit? 70, all right, if I go 70, I'm okay. There's nothing like that in this area. All you know is that's what they're looking at. And I think that's a horrible place for us to be. Obviously, you're, without being crazy about it, you're concurring that you've at least heard of it.
Oh, yes.
And so what the hell? I mean, what does that mean? The transfer agent won't take, I mean, what happens to the guy that has a stock? He just, no, you're an anti-money laundering list. I've never left the country. Doesn't matter. We think you're a risk. I mean, what the hell? Anyway, we can talk about that forever or not. But I mean, the thing of it is, my concern, Jeff, is it won't stop there.
Well, you know, I suppose you could make a strong case for that's probably the one emerging value coming out of Bitcoin that is sustainable. You know, no one knows the fate of that currency. And, you know, there's people that speak to both sides of that argument, whether or not it's even a currency for that matter. But the blockchain and its ability to eventually take over settlement is something that, you know, everyone's investing in. And the blockchain would be a perfect way to settle paper securities. So, you know, maybe there's a solution there down the road.
Well, I'm going to run this by you guys. I'm going to say that I think that Bitcoin breaks all essentially the rules of currency in the sense that there's nothing of value there that you're purchasing. You know, my research on this goes all the way back to, you know, cigarettes and concentration camps kind of thing. And, you know, my suspicion is in Venezuela right now where there's no currency in certain areas, either there's a lot of barter going on or something is the standard. Either it's okay, if I paint your house that's worth 15 bottles of tequila, and I'm not casting aspersions at anybody, but and if I take out your garbage for a month that's worth 12, you owe me 3. You know, there has to be somewhat of a standard currency, and whoever it is has to have some value on its own. So here's the two things I think are going to come together. One is, with all these governments basically up everybody's behind on what they're doing, there's going to be an alternative currency. But I think the alternative currency is going to be somebody who seems to be on the cutting edge of things like you, Jeff, and saying, you know what? I just happen to own 90 bazillion barrels of oil. How about I issue currency based on one barrel of oil I actually have here? So every currency is going to be worth $60. But tomorrow might be worth 59, next day 61. But the fact is, this note is for one barrel of oil in Jeff's place. I mean, I don't see how you break the
sounds a little like the gold standard to me.
Well, yeah, well, sure.
Right.
But my point is, I don't see how you break the part where the thing itself has to have a value to it.
You would think, right?
And so, but I also think that the way the governments are going and people don't trust them and they just keep throwing money out, eventually there needs to be something else. And maybe it'll be oil rights, might be back to gold. But I don't know. But I mean, to me, there's a collision coming here someplace. I don't know where it's going to be. I'm just lobbing it out there. What do you think, John? Am I nuts as usual?
Well, no, I agree that that sounds like the gold standard, or even if it was based on, as kooky as this sounds, raw land, you know, government land even, or something like that, so it had a real value, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, the only problem is the government's got all the gold. So they're not going to do it. So they have to be somebody else. They're not going to compete with their own currency. I don't think. So, how much of, John had mentioned that Jeff is in this, he loves this robotics, artificial intelligence, this whole, I'm fascinated with this, but to be honest with you, I don't know where to start. Where exactly, if I wanted to all of a sudden invest in this area, other than reading your magazine, what do I do?
Well, there's a lot of places to look. You know, we mentioned, usually when we do a deep dive on a topic, we speak directly to that, and we look at the different forms of sources that are out there that you can come up to speed with. The most intelligent one I came across was MIT's Artificial Intelligence. It's a podcast by Lex Fridman where he brings on the best and brightest in the field, and that's a podcast that anybody can get to. And what's interesting is you have an MIT professor speaking to other leaders in robotics and artificial intelligence, but he has a way of bringing the conversation down to a very pedestrian and embraceable level. So that's a great learning tool. There's also a new book called Architects of Intelligence by Martin Ford that has interviews with 23 of the brightest minds in the space. That book was, again, very accessible in terms of understanding what lies ahead. That book is also reviewed in the magazine. And then there's some fun things, too. There's a podcast, and since that's your audience, they know podcasts. There's a podcast called My Dead Wife, The Robot Car, which we reviewed as well. And we made the parallel, being an older guy, and I guess, Tom, you might remember this, too. Remember My Mother, the Car? It was a short-lived, awful TV series ages ago.
It lasted about, I don't know, I'm going to say weeks.
Yeah, and this was the same concept, but this is a very funny thing. It's a improv comedy 10-episode series. It's about a guy who is a test driver for a robot car company. He's doing that just to pick up some spare money. And when he goes to pick up his robot car, it has an AI that is the AI of his dead wife. And they gave it to him because they thought it would be nice to have the AI of someone that you once loved. But they didn't realize that they hated each other. They were about to get a divorce, but she was a drunk driver and drove off a bridge and died right before they were going to get divorced. So now she's controlling his car, and it's a very, very funny thing. So we also review some fun things, too. You know, that's not a very serious source, but it was definitely worth listening to.
If you had to say who's sort of driving the bus? Is it the Maddie Webbers of the world saying, "I really would like somebody to walk the damn dog," and then you invest a bunch of money and people design and invent stuff to get to your goal, like a Elon Musk kind of thing, or is it somebody invents something and you look at it and you go, "Gee, I could use that to have a robot that throws frisbees or something"? Is the technology driving the thought, or is the thought pulling the technology?
It seems like, boy, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure my answer is accurate, but I would say, based on where most of the development is occurring, which is on the manufacturing side, I think it's driven by corporations looking to reduce labor costs through automation.
Okay.
So the bulk of the investment is going to robotics automation for manufacturing, and that basically is to decrease the amount of people working on an assembly line, and that's where they've been most effective too, in that space. And then, you know, it's going to work its way into the food service space. That's an area that's really going to be hurt by automation, and obviously that's a lot of jobs for a lot of people in food service. But, you know, McDonald's and Burger King are already experimenting with kiosks and using computers to make their hamburgers. So, you know, that's, but it's driven by large corporations that have large labor costs that are looking to reduce those costs.
Well, I'm going to lob one at you, and this is one of the phenomenons, and John and I talk about it, and a lot of the other people do, is a lot of these, quote, cost savings, and they are there. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Why, sort of on the same thing, we have people buying up other firms, like we talked about earlier, why haven't the costs gone down? Why have the prices not gone down? Because in theory, and one of the themes of the show, if you've listened to a couple of them, is that, you know, I spent a lot of years learning this theoretical, you know, economics, and a lot of stuff that the theory predicted isn't happening. Now, is it being? I think that in China, for instance, people don't get raises because the political people keep their finger on the neck of the labor force. Same thing maybe in Mexico. I mean, why are the people at the Chevy plant still making $3 an hour like they did 10 years ago, when obviously the Chevys are higher and there's some more competition for the jobs? Is it, you know, is it the drug lords that make sure that none of these people squeal or they get shot? I mean, I don't know. But somehow or another, you would think that if you have automation, that some of that should go to the employee, to the extent you have any left, and some of it should go to the price being lower. Yet it doesn't appear that it's flowing through to people quite that much. I mean, an automobile costs a hell of a lot more. I mean, we're down to, what, 25 hours per car, and the car's still $30,000. I mean, you might as well have nobody working at it. You can't, I mean, where is all the dough? Is it all going to management? Is it going to regulation? Is it going to government? Where is it?
Well, you could argue that we are in a pretty low inflationary environment right now, and that you're not seeing the acceleration of costs that we've seen in the past, and maybe that's where some of it's going. We know that a lot of it's going into the coffers of large public companies who are sitting on more cash than they ever have, and then that's going into corporate buybacks that are fueling the stock market rise.
I'm going to ask you a serious question, not that the rest of them haven't been. Do you believe these inflation numbers for a second?
That's a good question.
So we ask serious stuff on this show. We're not.
Well, I do note the New York Times article over the weekend about, not to jump to politics, but it's directly related, that there were three economic modelers that were predicting a Trump win. The first one was focused on the Electoral College. The second one was focused on 12 economic models. And the third was a combination of, and I think this was Donald Luskin's model, which correctly predicted the last two presidential general elections. And it was a combination of growth rates of inflation and GDP and incumbency, those three factors being the most predictive of general election outcomes. And noting that this low inflationary environment and yet high GDP growth correspond with incumbency was kind of a, would contribute to a lock in a general election. So that doesn't answer your question if the numbers are real, but at least the data makes it appear as though it's real.
What's the old saying? You can fool all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, and you can't fool all the people all the time.
Sounds right.
And so, I mean, I don't, this, whatever. It's one of my pet peeves on the inflation stuff, because every sort of anecdotal thing you put into it. I mean, if you want to, I'll let you know. You learned something today, first day on the show. If you look at the PCE deflator, the adjusted PCE deflator that the Fed uses, if I were to ask you what percentage of the basket, for lack of a better term, should medical care be, what would you say?
15%?
It's like 20% of the economy. They lower it down. They adjust it down to 5%.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So if you were to use your 15% over the last 10 years, what do you think the inflation number would be?
Three times higher than what they're showing.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So it's, I mean, if you're willing to take out everything, I think they have something like tuition is like 5.5 or 6.
Yeah.
Now, so if you pull out medical care, tuition, and don't count things like taxes and fees and parking tickets and tolls and things like that, nothing the state does, your personal cost of living could be up one hell of a lot without it being shown on any of their stuff. Wouldn't you say?
Right, absolutely.
I mean, the better question is, how long are people going to believe that? I mean, especially this tariff. Now, we're talking about $800 of the latest by, what did Kenny say it was, Manny? It wasn't Morgan Stanley. It was one of the Fed guys. Is $800 a family, or $800 a person, is the tariffs going to raise prices. Now, are we not going to count those too? That's because that's a, what is that? We're not sure exactly what that is, but we're not going to count that either. I mean, it's pretty, Jan, how come with all this stuff, why isn't gold going up, and will it? I ask you this every week. Should we hang into our gold?
Well, yeah, I'm probably going to hang. I'm not probably. I'm going to still, hang in there. We'll see. Looks like we could have a little bit of move down today, but as to the why, your guess is as good as mine. We're constantly perplexed by that.
You know what I think I'm going to do, though, for the guys that I have in gold and are kind of stuck? I'm going to synthetically create a long precision in the XL, what's the healthcare one? XLV?
Yeah.
I think that one's gotten beaten up a little too much. And I'm gonna put a long position in there in addition to the gold stuff. I want to do something other than gold. I don't want to get out of the gold, but I don't want to just stick in there totally either in a few spots. So if you had to pick a small, like an XLE or whatever, Dr. J and those guys were all over the XLV last week because it's gotten clobbered. Because the Democrats are going to do this and they're going to do that, but I don't know. Who knows? They get into anything if they don't get in. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of doing a getting sneaky long in there for people.
Yeah.
You try and talk me out of it or into it?
Some bits and pieces, of that whole sector for some of my folks anyhow. So I would agree with that, Tom. It's, one area that's it should have some value that's really beaten down.
Jeff, since you worked in a mutual fund, is there an ETF / mutual fund / anything where you could get involved in some of this area you're talking about, this kind of NASDAQ size, for lack of a better term, robot, those kinds of areas, doing that sorts of research? Is there some kind of an index you could get involved in, or you have to just keep picking companies?
We were looking for them to accompany the stories that we did, and there are several, but they're underperforming, or they're extremely high beta, or in the case of one company, the Direction Funds has a 3X index, which makes no sense at all.
Oh, God, why would you even try to do that?
Yeah, right. So, no, there didn't seem to be anything that was an appropriate proxy for the space.
I got a question for you. If there's no options trade down, how do you even do a 3X thing?
Structured derivatives underneath. Yeah, they're bad. Those are bad deals for investors. And I know I've been involved in building those products in the past. And there's just
how do they get approved?
It's a good question. They don't track on the way up, and they if they sit still for a while, there's a theta involved there, a time decay. That's just they're just tough products all the way around.
Right? And yet people lose money and they get approved. I guess not to speak out of school, but if you own a brokerage firm, they're all over you about heightened awareness and heightened supervision. And my question has always been, get rid of them.
Yeah, right.
You can allow a product because you can't tell a big firm no. Then you come down on all the small firms for letting people trade it. That's the world we're in.
Or tweet.
Yeah. I mean, talk a little more about your magazine. We got a couple minutes.
Well, it's nationwide at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million stores. That's the print magazine, which is as you see what's in front of you, it's a good-looking magazine. Brought an award-winning editorial team that was part of Futures magazine in the past, so we know the financial markets well, but we were looking to go a little bit wider with our coverage, so there's a lot of equity coverage. We do deep dives into a major topic or theme, and then there's always a monthly poker column and a monthly gambling column. There's things on fitness. There's whiskey reviews, music reviews. So it's a different kind of publication.
So you're going to sell me a robot that's going to get the beer for me, and then you're going to give me a fitness column.
How about it, right? Right.
I love it.
That's special.
The focus is on probability, so we're really numbers obsessed. We look at everything from a probability perspective, and that's...
What's the health of the selling first of all, I love buying magazines. Although I was going to buy a World War II summary on National Geographic, they wanted $21 worth for a magazine.
Yeah, those special editions are really getting pricey, right?
So is it still healthy enough? Obviously healthy enough for you guys to publish.
You can't be in the news business, obviously. You can't, news is a commodity that's best delivered online, but the niches are alive and well, you know, whether it be fashion, fitness, finance, home decor, guns and ammo, military intelligence, cars, gambling, sports, any narrow, you know, music, those categories have dozens of titles because there's dozens of advertisers and there's lots of loyal fans who want to understand a space better. So just can't be in the news business and
Well, Matty wants his NRA and his guns and ammo and stuff delivered.
Matty gave you a tip, and maybe we can talk about it next time. He was a little fascinated by the esports numbers.
That's a whole segment. That's why I didn't go down that road.
And the data is huge. There's a lot to talk about there.
So, real quick, if 100 of them go to a local Target, how many get sold? 100?
A good pull on a magazine on newsstand is 35% to 45%.
We do with the rest of them.
The rest of them get tossed.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
S&P futures down 175, but NASDAQ futures up 6. John, thank you. Talk to you on Friday. More about the markets. Jeff, thank you. Well, obviously, you're coming back. Matty Weber, good job with all the people on the phone as usual. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.